Thanks for joining us, and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on our website, on our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve Bradley kicks off 2019 with our series, Ready for a Change. Now, here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. Happy New Year. If I didn't get a chance to say Happy New Year to you. You know, one of the things I've noticed is a lot of times New Year's roll around, and especially as people get older sometimes, they no longer make any sort of New Year's resolutions. They no longer set any new goals in life. And it's not because you can't dream anymore, right? It's not because you don't want to set goals or you don't have things that you want to see change. It usually comes from this. You just become discouraged. You just feel like, yeah, I did that before. Nothing ever happened. Nothing ever changed. Or the setbacks that you go through in life, and let me go ahead and tell you, just in case you hadn't figured this part out, we all go through setbacks. No one is exempt from those things. There is no cure from going through those things. In fact, actually going through setbacks is part of the process of learning and growing how to trust God, how to believe God, and it helps to shape your goal setting and your dreams. See, one of the reasons that we become discouraged with our dreams and our goals is because they just don't turn out the way we wanted them to. But there's this other part of your dreams and your goals, mine also, and that is, yeah, but what are God's dreams and goals for my life? Because He has them. You were made by God. You were created by Him. You dream, you set goals because God made you that way. But you also have to take your dreams and your goals and things like that and ask God, okay, is this what you want for my life? Is this what I should be shooting for? Is this where I should be heading? Rather than just looking for, this is the way the world will teach you that you need to find a God. I'm looking for a God who will accomplish my goals and my dreams and will cause what I want to happen in my life. Well, listen, if that's what you're looking for, you're not looking for God. You're looking for a genie, right? Looking for somebody that just makes it work out your way. And the problem is, your goals are going to be different from my goals, so it's going to bring conflict in life, and it's going to make it difficult for you. And eventually, you will wind up discouraged because most of them then won't happen. They won't take place. But instead, if you dream and you set vision and you try to come up with ideas and you take them before God, and then the ones that don't happen because God has other dreams and visions, you learn how to deal with those things, then what happens is you can find a way to stay on track in life. This past week, my garage door opener died. And so it's the one that opens the garage door for my wife's car. So I knew I had to fix it pretty quickly. My wife knew it was probably not a good idea for me to fix it. We need to call someone. The New Year's not a really good time to get someone out there. So my son and my son's a lot more mechanical than I am, we go to a Home Depot. We buy a garage door opener. Just so happens that the guy that runs all of them was here last service. He came up and said, thank you. And I told him, you're welcome. And brought it home, and I decided we need to put this up. We need to put this up ourselves. So we start to try to install this garage door opener. And one of the things that happened is I was hoping, you know, garage door openers have sensors on the door, and they're wired back to the unit. And I was hoping that the ones that are already, you know, the wires already run and the sensors already mounted in there, we could just hook those up and they would work. You know, no, it doesn't work that way. It's a new unit, new maker. They've got their own technology, so I had to rip down the old sensors and the wires that were stapled in, you know, to the ceiling, and I had to put some new ones back up. Well, I was looking in a drawer, and of all things, I just happened to have a big staple gun, one made for, you know, walls and wood and sheetrock and things. I was like, wow, I forgot I even had this big one. And I'm looking at it, I'm saying, I wonder if it has any staples in it. And so I'm holding it like this, and it takes two hands to push this thing. It's big spring-loaded. And I'm thinking a staple is going to fly out of here toward the wall, you know, if it has staples in it. I go, pop! No staple flew out, but I felt this pain in my hand. Oh, yeah. And just to let you know, my son can testify to this. I did not say a bad word. I wanted to, but I did not say a bad word. In fact, I didn't say anything. I went, and he looked and was like, and then he looked at me and said, did you just put a staple in your hand? And I can show you the marks afterwards. It's not a vampire, but there are two holes in my hand, and it's sitting there in my hand, and I use my fingernail to kind of try to pull it up, and it doesn't want to come out because I put it in really well. I look, it did not come out the back, but I put it in really well. And finally, I pull, and the skin's pulling up, and finally, it kind of pops out. And then my son said, maybe I should use that from now on. You know, so, and he's right, you know. Now, I say that because, you know, that wasn't the only setback in trying to put up this garage door opener. Things that you wire, you program it, all of a sudden they don't work. And here's what happens, especially to me as I've gotten older. Late at night, it's dark. I start thinking, what am I doing out here? All I'm doing is making a mess. It's not going to work. I'm going to have to call someone. They're going to charge me more. They're going to say something like, well, Mr. Bradley, you know, if you'd have called us originally, it would cost this. But since you've already done all this, we have to undo it. And it's going to cost you a lot. You know, you ever do that? Yeah, you're thinking of everything that could possibly go wrong. And what was I thinking? This is a huge mistake. But eventually we got it put up. It works great. In fact, if you want to come by and see my new garage door opener, it's how you know you're old when you want to show people things like that, you know, and, it eventually worked. I was listening to Rick Warren a couple weeks ago. And if you know who Rick Warren is, he's a very famous pastor out of California, wrote a book that sold, I don't know, 40 million copies or something like that. And Rick was saying this. He's talking about dreams and goals, and he was saying that the second year after he started his church, which I think was around 1979 or 1980, the second year, he calls it his dark year. He says, I was depressed for an entire year. Yeah. It's a guy incredibly successful. I was depressed for an entire year. He said, in fact, my goal was, I didn't dream and set goals that year. I was just hoping every day to be able to get out of the bed and be able to take the next step and to walk and function. Those are his words, not my words. You ever felt like that before? In fact, you know what I notice is most of the time we don't like to tell people when we're in a state like that. But all of us go through something like that in life. We do. We don't like to tell someone because we're embarrassed. We feel like, why would you be this way? I think a part of us says, if I say something about how I feel, that may kind of just cement it in or staple it in, right? And I'll never get out of this situation or it'll never be any better. And so here he is about 40 years later telling that story. Because that's usually the way it works. He got out of it, you know, almost 40 years ago, and things didn't end up the way he was afraid they were going to end up. They moved on. The reason I say that is, listen, you don't have to stay where you are. When you get in a place like that, it's just a place you will pass through if you will look to God and trust God, because God will take you through that. And one of the stories that I actually really love in the New Testament is the story of John the Baptist. And people tend to think of John the Baptist as someone, you know, that's kind of a wild man, and God zapped him and he just does things because God zapped him, but he wasn't a real human being. But he actually was. And he went through the same struggles that you and I go through, same discouragement you and I go through. And we're going to look at one of the passages here in John chapter 3 as John goes through it. And if we look at it, you can learn some things about how to stay on track even when you're going through discouragement and difficult times. How do you stay on track? How do you not quit? How do you not give up? How do you keep dreaming, keep planning, keep working, moving forward, knowing that there are things that will succeed? And if God is in it, if God is in it, God will make what His plans, He will make those come about. I want to jump in where God, you know, wants me to be and where God has for me, because it makes all the difference in the world. And so I want you to look at me. Look with me You can look at me also if you want to, but it'd be better to look with me at this story. This is out of John's gospel. In your outline, it says Matthew, and good, someone changed it. That's the right reference. So it was my fault. I'm the one that wrote Matthew in your outline. Here's what it says in John chapter number 3, beginning in verse 22. Then Jesus and his disciples, they left Jerusalem and they went into the Judean countryside. Jesus spent some time with them there, baptizing people. Now, this is a change because all of a sudden Jesus is baptizing as well as John was baptizing. And we talked last week about the fact that the Jewish synagogues and temples, they had a form of baptism also. And the Essenes, which was a different group of that group, even had other ceremonies and rituals involving baptism beyond that. But Jesus' disciples are now baptizing. Jesus actually did not baptize physically anyone. His disciples did. That's told in the next chapter. But it says in the next verse 23, at this time, John the Baptist was baptizing in Aenon near Salim because there was plenty of water there. And people kept coming to him for baptism. This was before John was thrown into prison. Now, the story of John in prison and his discouragement then is in Matthew chapter number 11. But this is before he was thrown into prison. Verse 25, a debate broke out between John's disciples and a certain Jew over ceremonial cleansing. That means baptism and washings and had to do with all that. And verse 26, so John's disciples came to him and said, Rabbi, the man you met on the other side of the Jordan River, they're referring to Jesus, the one you identified as the Messiah, is also baptizing people. And everybody is going to him instead of coming to us. Now, here's their discouragement. Their discouragement is, we're part of a movement. John, you're the head of this movement. We bought in. We left the temple and the Pharisees and all that because to follow you, because we like what you said. We saw the results of what you were doing, that God was with you. But here's our problem. There's this new guy that you said is the Messiah, and people are now leaving us instead of coming to us. They're leaving us, and they're following after him. You may not know this, but John, the guy who actually wrote this is not John the Baptist. This is John the Beloved, sometimes called John the Evangelist. He's the one that was closest to Jesus. John was actually a disciple of John the Baptist before he was a follower of Jesus. Actually, a couple of the disciples were. And when he found out he was the Messiah, John, the writer here, eventually leaves John the Baptist, his group, to follow after the Messiah because John the Baptist says, that's the guy, not me. He checks it out. He follows him and says, okay, well, then we're supposed to follow that guy. Yeah, that's part of the struggle that John the Baptist's disciples are having. I thought it was our group. I thought it was all about us. So there's a couple lessons here that you can learn from John the Baptist that will really help you get over discouragement. Not to be so sidetracked or knocked down by the obstacles that come in your way if you'll learn to do them. Here's three real quickly. First of all, learn to let it go. And I mean by that, don't take offense. Just learn to let it go. The Disney movie's right? In Frozen. I like to sing, Do You Want to Build a Snowman out of it? But my granddaughter likes, you know it, right? Let it go. Let it go. Oh, yeah. See, I know you've got grandkids and children also. Yeah. You've got to learn to let it go. Don't take offense. There are too many other things out there, better things, than for you to spend your time taking offense from other people and other movements and other things going on. And John, even though John's going to struggle with it, he is going to struggle. But John has decided that he's not going to take offense, and he'll actually explain in a minute exactly why. Second thing is, learn to listen to God more than you listen to other people. And that's the lesson, you know, that his disciples would have to learn to do. Don't listen to other people. Don't listen to what they say more than you listen to God. Listen to God more, because God can help keep you on track, keep you going, keep you motivated, and teach you, give you the strength to let it go, to not take offense at someone else. And then third thing is this, trust God to be your defense. Because see, here's what was happening. They were being attacked by a Jewish mindset saying, why are y'all baptizing? We baptize at the temple. And then they're seeing Jesus baptized and they're going, man, and they're spending their time in their minds the same way you and I would, defending themselves and what they do. Listen, don't do that. Let God be your defense. This is what John will do. John will not defend himself. He will not defend what he does. He will shift his loyalty, and he explains it in the next part of the passage. Look at the next verse. It says in verse 27, John replied, here he goes, no one can receive anything unless God gives it to him from heaven. You yourselves know how plainly I told you. Say this part with me. This is what he told them. I am not the Messiah. I told you that. I'm not here to defend my movement or whatever. I am not the Messiah. I am only here to prepare the way for him. And then he uses this metaphor of marriage and weddings in their region, how they would have understood it. And he says, it is the bridegroom who marries the bride. And the best man is simply glad to stand with him and hear his vows. Therefore, I am filled with, say this part with me, I am filled with joy at his, boy, isn't that a great word? I am filled with joy at his success. He must become greater and greater. I must become what? He must increase, I must decrease. John is saying this, listen, this is the way it is. You have to learn to see it this way. You have to learn to accept it this way, or you're going to get stuck in a rut. You're going to get stuck where you are. You're going to spend your life insulted. You're going to spend your life feeling sorry for yourself. You're going to spend your life defending yourself when there's nothing to defend. God will defend you. Just follow him and trust him instead. Let me give you three things quickly that John is saying. This will make your truth better. I mean, the truth about your life better. If you will grasp these things. It's what John is grasping. There is a higher authority, and because of that, there's a greater movement than John himself. There's a higher authority, and there's a greater movement than my movement, than me. And he is looking to that higher authority and that greater movement. That means John is finding his place. John is going to say, no, this is how it works. This is what you need to grasp. This is your place in the world. You need to be okay with that. It is the enemy that tries to teach you to step out of your lane and take a place that is not yours. Just go back and read the first three chapters of Genesis. He is the one that tries to get you discouraged and to get you, unfulfilled with your place and who you are, and to want more than you should want, to try to grasp more than you should grasp, rather than taking your place and taking your role. Last Sunday, well, I was here, and actually I had some friends that were very kind to me not to tell me this until afterwards, after the second service. My wife had to go to an emergency vet, and one of our dogs passed away. And if you've heard me talk before, I talk about my two chihuahuas, Cowboy and Bear, and they are just, two marauders who have a big bark and a little bite, and they're just so much a part of our lives. They're both 11 years old. And so last Sunday, his heart gave out. And, it's sad. But I learned things from watching Cowboy. Cowboy, even the last day, that Sunday morning, when I got up first, he ate. He did the things Cowboy does. He got over by the fireplace with his brother, with Bear, and Bear's pushing on him, and he's growling at him, letting him know, hey, don't push me around. He jumps up in my lap. He'll sit like a person sometimes on his rear end. I call him the coyote when he does that, and on his back and look at me like that. He did all of that. He ran outside and chased the big egrets that are around our backyard. He ran them off because he's insulted by them, and that's what he does. And he did everything the same way that he has always done everything, including take his role with me. He acknowledged me as the pack leader. as long as I don't have a stapler in my hand. You know, it's but the truth is, I knew where the food was and I could reach it. And that was a big deal. He always acknowledged that. And he lived his life, even the last day, even the last hour of his life, the same way he had always lived his life until he was gone. And I told the last service, I'll tell you this too. I want to be like Cowboy. I do. I want to live my life the way God made me to live my life, not become discouraged, not give up, not feel sorry for myself, not roll over and not trying anymore. I want to continue to do what I was created to do and live the life that I was created to live until the last day. That's the way I want to go. And I want to go out like Cowboy, just to let you know. I don't know if I will. But here's what I figured it out is if I want to go out like Cowboy, I've got to live like Cowboy, right? Not discouraged, not giving up, not no longer trying, not giving it my best, but instead give it my best. Here's what John earlier in the first chapter, what he says about Jesus. He says, John the Baptist testified about him in verse 15 and shouted to the crowd, "This is the one," he's talking about Jesus, "I was talking about when I said, someone is coming after me who is far greater than I am, for he existed long before me." And that's because that's who he's put his hope in. There's someone coming after me, but he's greater than me because he actually existed long before me. Now that translates out for John as far as the future is concerned, I'll trust him. He knows more about the future than I do. Here's the second thing. It's not about me. I know that's hard to figure sometimes. It's actually not about me. It really is about him. And he has graciously given me a place in his story. That's what he's done. I've got a place. I've got a place where I belong, a part to play. And that is his gracious gift to me, the one who existed before I did, who is greater than I am, has called me and placed me in that position. I'm the best man. I'm not the bridegroom. I can't do what the bridegroom can do, but I can point to him. I can say, that's the one. I can live my life in a way that honors who he is, and I can follow the plans that he has for me, the role, the place that he's given me. Third thing is, John would say, and rejoice in his success, right? Rejoice in his success. When the bridegroom comes for his bride, incidentally, you may not realize this, you know who the bride is that he's referring to? It's a metaphor, but you know who the bride is? Yeah, it's us. That's the bride. Jesus is the bridegroom. We're the bride. Sorry, guys. You know, I know you may not have wanted to be a bride, but you are, you know. That's who he's come for. And the best man has a chance to prepare, work toward that day when he takes his bride, you know, and rejoice and be excited for the day that he does come and he claims his bride. There's no better place in life to be able to be excited and rejoice in his success. His success is an eternal success, not temporary. His success will go long beyond my place, my part in my life, but he's given me a chance to be a part of that. Put one other fill in the blank in here. I think that it's good for you to think about. There are two ways that you can miss the potential of your life. One is to underachieve. And in the world, the world is really good about screaming and hollering and pointing at you and trying to challenge you not to underachieve. Don't miss your potential. Don't give it half effort. Don't quit. Don't give up. But there's another part to this also. The other part is to overstate. Now, let me tell you why overstating is just as bad, maybe worse than underachieving. Because when you overstate, you're going to be discouraged. You can't get there. When you overstate, you're stating things you can't do. And no matter how much you try, no matter how hard you work, you're not going to get there. So to overstate is the most discouraging thing of all. And to overstate will eventually cause you to underachieve, to not do the part that you can do, to not give it your best effort in light of the life that God has given you and the part that God has called you to play. I know a lot of people that will say, you know, aim at perfection. I don't think you should aim at perfection. You can't achieve that. And by aiming at perfection, some people will say, I know, but by aiming at perfection, you'll at least achieve more. I think the opposite is true. By aiming at perfection, something you cannot do, you are setting yourself up for constant discouragement no matter how much you achieve. Constant discouragement no matter how much you achieve. And that will cause you to quit dreaming, quit setting goals, quit trying. I think a better way to do it is this. Look at your life, take your life before God, and say, God, where can I get better? Where am I not doing a good job? Where's there a deficiency in my life? And then I can work on that part. I can do better at what God has called me to do and what God wants me to do. I can find my place. I can become like John. I can rejoice in the things that God has done. I can rejoice when the bridegroom comes and claims his bride. Why? I had a part in it. I was there for it. I wasn't dreaming of being God. Instead, I was getting to live out and act out my part, my role, like cowboy. So now, if you hear me say, I'm going to live like cowboy, you'll know who I'm talking about. It's not an OS movie. It's how he lived instead. Here's how the passage finishes. And if you want to mark this in your Bibles, would be even better. I think beginning of verse number 31, these are not the words of John the Baptist, and this is not just my opinion. This is the opinion of most biblical scholars. I think these are the words of John, the writer of the gospel, sometimes called John the Beloved or John the Evangelist. I think John the Baptist, his words stop with the he must increase, I must decrease. And then this is like commentary, or John talking more himself about the theology that comes out of this. And the reason they say this is because the language, the words, everything about it is totally different from the quoting from John the Baptist. But someone may have a different opinion. But this is what he says. He says, he who comes from above is above all. He who is of the earth is from the earth and speaks of the earth. He who comes from heaven is above all. What he has seen and heard, of that he testifies, and no one receives his testimony. He who has received his testimony has set his seal on this, that God is true. For he whom God has sent speaks the words of God, speaking of Jesus. For he gives the Spirit without measure, speaking of Jesus. The Father loves the Son and has given all things into his hand. He who believes in the Son has eternal life. But he who does not obey the Son will not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. And I have the same passage below that. This is from Eugene Peterson's paraphrase of the same passage in a Bible that he calls The Message. And I think you really like this. This really helps you to catch it, I think, and understand. I think he did a great job with this paraphrase. He says, this is verse 31, the one who comes from above is head and shoulders over other messengers from God. The earthborn is earthbound and speaks earth language. The heavenborn is in a league of his own. He sets out the evidence of what he saw and heard in heaven. No one wants to deal with these facts, but anyone who examines this evidence will come to stake his life on this, that God himself is the truth. The one that God sent speaks God's words, and don't think he rations out the Spirit in bits and pieces. The Father loves the Son extravagantly. He turned everything over to him so he could give it away, a lavish distribution of gifts. That is why whoever accepts and trusts the Son gets in on everything, life complete and forever. And that is also why the person who avoids and distrusts the Son is in the dark and doesn't see life. All he experiences of God is darkness, and an angry darkness at that. So, why is it important for you to learn to see things God's way and to see yourself as you really are? Three things I think that John points out quickly here. First of all, because if you can see yourself as you really are, then you get a chance to see God as he really is. If you learn to see yourself as you really are, then you get a chance to see God as He really is. In fact, the number one reason we do not see God as He really is because we don't see ourselves as we are. We get in the way of the line of sight. We want to see ourselves as more than we are, and because of it, it blocks our view of God as He really is. So it's really not a good thing. It really prohibits us rather than promotes our lives. Second thing is, because you can benefit of all the things that God wants to give you. That's why you want to see yourself as you really are, because now you see God as He is, and you get a chance to benefit of all the things that God has done for you, that Jesus has done actually for you. And the third thing is then you can experience His love, I put it this way, for as long as He is. Not as long as you are, but you get a chance to experience His love for as long as He is. That's a long, long, long time. We're going to celebrate the Lord's Supper together. And I'll remind you as we do that, that this celebration is something that was done ever since Jesus came. The church would gather and they would celebrate it. And it may sound strange that you celebrate someone's death, someone dying on the cross, but there was a reason for it. And it was because of who they saw Jesus, who He was, and they realized what He had done for them. Now, just like I was talking about, you know, how you look back at discouraging times, remember, they did this as they looked back. They celebrated it once again because Jesus was resurrected, because Jesus did change the world. And they looked back and realized all that He promised, all that He said, all that He did, actually, it worked. It made a difference. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we thank You that You've come to make a difference in our lives and the lives of those around us. And for some reason, You chose to make us apart. You made us the way we are. You shaped us the way we are. But then in the midst of our struggles and our falls and our discouragement, You knew someone had to come to bring us back to where we should be, back into the relationship that we were made for, back into the trust that we needed to put in You rather than in ourselves. You sent Your Son Jesus to take our eyes off of ourselves and to see the One who had eternal love for us, who really could change our lives for the better. You're here this morning and you've never given your heart to Jesus Christ. Maybe you realize I've been looking for the wrong things. I'm looking for someone who would make my dreams come true. All along, it was God's dreams that I needed. Jesus, thank You for coming, changing the way I see things, making God the Father clear, His love crystal, the gifts, the dreams that You give us, making those relate, making them work because of who You are. If you've never opened up your heart to Jesus Christ, never put your hope and your trust in Him, what a great time to do that as we celebrate in His name.